Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Tired of seeing all those happy couples out for Valentine's Day and wondering why you're not out among them? Today, a dating guide for teens that might just apply to adults as well. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back with us. He's learned a lot about dating from having spent so much time with his teenage and young adult clients. He's back today to share his rules for successful coupling. One of them, never date someone you wouldn't consider marrying. Dr. Wes Crenshaw co-authors the Double Take Advice column for teens and their parents in the Lawrence Journal World, and he's author of the books Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens and Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. And Wes, welcome back, and by all means, happy Valentine's Day to you.
I never thought that you would be my Valentine.
Well,
today,
here
Steve.
We are. Here we are together.
I'm happy
alone
you are.
In the studio here, Wes. Yeah. So, Wes, as of Groundhog Day, you've been married for 28 years. It seems like you've been out of the dating pool for a while. So, how did you wind up as a dating guru of one kind or another here?
Yeah, my wife doesn't approve of me actually testing my theories personally, but when you're working as a therapist, particularly with young adults and teenagers and people coming out of a divorce, mm-hmm. all of whom have a lot in common when it comes to dating, you really have to come to realize that a lot of therapy is learning how to love and be loved, teaching people to learn how to be, love and be loved. And so at that point, you better develop a technology for it because it's the top topic everybody wants to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where expertise comes from.
Not a bad thing to have, I imagine, in your line of work. So how do you get kids or adults, for that matter, to, you know, open up easily about something as personal as dating and sexuality? And I guess, you know, my own experience has been with my kids and their generation that kids these days talk a lot more openly about such things as when I was a kid, which I guess maybe says something about me. I don't know.
maybe more about the culture. There's a dark and a light side to a lot of things. And as much as we have good reason to criticize the sexualization of our culture in movies and media and so on, the one positive that's come from that is it does make people more conversant.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a pretty substantial change over my 20 years of practice. It's just not difficult at this point, particularly for young women, 15 and up, to talk about those issues because they're interesting and they see it everywhere else. And my view of this has been, and increasingly so, as we've talked about many times, that if we don't just embrace that discussion and talk about it openly and easily, then we're pushing people, young people, toward the worst aspects of sexuality and coupling that we really don't want them to be as attracted to. So we have to get our own comfortability set up on that.
Has this been a gradual change that you've noticed, or did it happen more suddenly than that in recent years?
I think it's been what we would call in research an accelerating curve. Mm. It has increased, particularly in the era of social media. The relationship between social media and sexuality is a complex and intense one. And so the more, just like if you join a group or tweet about the Jayhawks, as we hope you all do.
Over here in heathen land.
People tweet and put stuff up on Facebook and talk amongst themselves and join groups and look up issues of dating, relationships, and sexuality online. So there's a lot of information out there. The question is that, you know, what if that is good information and what if it's problematic?
How different is dating, Wes, you know, at 16 today versus 16 and 21 versus someone, you know, going back a number of years? What's been the big change you've seen?
Well, I think what's funny about it is it's weirdly similar. Mm-hmm. That's why I had sort of thought today in our discussion of dating, people who have teenagers shouldn't tune out because anyone who's interested in it from their own life will gain because there's so many similarities in what you have to do to be successful.
You're talking
dating.
About similarities between someone who's 16 or 21 or even 36 these days.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's going to be in the dating pool faces a lot of the same issues. Now, what is different is that younger people, as we've discussed on occasion, fall into kind of two categories. There's the radical monogamists, and I see a bunch of those who may have had by age 22 or 3, maybe only one or two major long-term relationships. And then there are the hookup generation who work through several very casual models of dating and interaction. And so that's a little more the younger generation, but I see more than one divorced person thinking that looks pretty good, and they decide to emulate young people.
And how does that work out?
I am never a fan. It, as much as I'm comfortable talking about these issues, in my beliefs about coupling, I'm a little more conservative than the kids I see, and they all know that. I believe that the striving for an actual relationship is what one ought to be doing. And I'll tell kids, I think sexuality ought to have a spiritual component, not religiously, but in a sense that it is a spiritual experience. It isn't like shooting pool on a Friday night.
So. Yeah, you say one of your rules for dating, which surprised me, I guess, because it's so blunt and I never really quite heard it this way before, is never date someone you wouldn't consider marrying.
You think I'm blunt, Steve?
Well, once in a while. And we appreciate that about you.
Yeah. That's one of several that I think initially does kind of hook people. And it isn't meant to be a hook. That it's fine to not marry everybody you date. That would be expensive and problematic in many ways. But if you're dating someone you wouldn't consider marrying, or alternatively, sometimes with kids and young adults, I'll say, if you're dating someone you wouldn't let your daughter go out with, either of those is a metric for whether this is a good dating partner. Mm-hmm. If you think, oh, my God, I hope I don't end up with him, why are you dating? Like, what is the purpose? And the goal in this whole process, I swear next year I've been looking online, and if anybody finds candy boxes in the shape of brains, I want to get about 250. I'll buy a gross of them, because I'm going to take the candies out of the little hearts and put them in the little brain boxes and give them out to my clients.
Because
I want them to be thinking about their dating. Mm-hmm. I want them to get their little candies out of a brain box, because their heart will usually lead them into trouble. Mm. So it's a thought-based process.
Yeah, you've said before along these lines that teen and young adult dating is a very strong predictor of how kids are going to wind up coupling later on in life. Why is that? Because, to me, dating just involves so much trial and error, and in my case, mostly error. It just did.
You have a very nice spouse.
Yes, well, I do. I'm talking about the precursor to all that. Yeah.
Well, you have to be practicing in adolescence for pretty much everything. I mean, high school, as much as filled with silliness as it is a practice for real life. It's hard to believe when you're in the throes of it, but getting up and going to something every day really is a metaphor for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, who you give your love to, who you become sexually involved with and emotionally involved with, patterns you. Now, sure, maybe you learn some negative things and you think, this is not who I want to be with down the road. Great. That's part of that search process you were talking about. But you have to be practicing at this point. And this is why parents really can't, with younger teens, really can't just say you can't date till you're X age. That's like putting your kid behind the wheel at 16 and saying, drive. Mm-hmm. That isn't how it works. You have a building up process. You're learning the rules of the road. You're understanding the feel of the car as you go down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supervised in that process. So dating's the same way, and it builds towards the adult relationships. What you learn as a teenager, you will tend to replicate or pull against sometimes as an adult.
Let's get our listeners involved here with your questions, maybe for your own dating, or by all means, if your kids are dating and you want to ask a question with Dr. West, who has a whole lot of experience with kids and dating, what's going on? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You say one of your rules, you're only really ready to date when you don't need to have a relationship to be happy. You say never let yourself stay with anyone you have to be with. Relationships require authentic choice, not dependency.
Yep.
And you see a whole lot of dependency out there, don't you?
A lot. In every, literally every day in my office, this is the struggle. And for all of us in relationships, we are trying to balance our independence with our interdependence. And you cannot do that by being alone. People will, you know, we have this sort of myth in our world that you get yourself together and then you're ready to date. That mm-hmm. sounds so pretty, but you can't really be for yourself without being in a context with others. And so you're having to practice self within the relationship. And so
and that's a real hard nut to crack for kids, right?
It's very complicated because it's very easy to lose yourself in that process to become dependent, mm-hmm. which is not the same thing as interdependent, mm-hmm. that you're mixed with someone that's your equal. And so if you can accept being alone, you don't have to be alone, but you have to be able to be alone. Otherwise, you get a power imbalance in the relationship, and that's where things tend to go south in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org. Is it hard to explain that concept to, I was thinking teenagers, but even adults for that matter? Is that a hard thing to get across?
Teenagers and adults coming right out of divorce both have a difficult time with that. Everybody does, really, because, and it isn't hard to explain it. They get it. It's hard to, I don't know how to, what word to use, but to sort of enforce it, to bring it about, to mm-hmm. get them to act on it. Because it's when one feels that they need a relationship or a person, which are two kind of different things,
right.
It's difficult to what's called individuate yourself and be able to step back and have that authentic choice. This is a big thing. Kids are all about doing their own thing, being choosers. And the one place they have a hard time with that is in the dating relationship. You will have this headstrong kid that you had to, you know, march around and force to do things because she was so tough. And then you get into the relationship and that all disappears. So you want to be careful how much will you break in a young person, because it may turn out that will is broken with the dating partner.
I mean, for a lot of people, do you have to be a certain age to sort of reach that point where you can, you know, separate yourself from the person you're with? I mean, do you need to be typically 21, 24 before you can get there?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is the paradox. You've stumbled right into it.
No, everyone's different. I get all that.
No, but, you're so much on the target. It is the paradox of dating that nobody is ready to truly be successful in a relationship till their brain is finished fully developing, mm-hmm. which is about age 25. Mm. And most people will have a lot of mileage on their dating life by the time they hit 25. I was married by that age. So really, if you had to get a real license to get married, you would get it at 25 based on brain chemistry. Now, is that going to happen? No. So we have to work with what we have at 16, 18, 21. And helping people fully understand some of these concepts doesn't kick in until 25. But that's what practice is for.
What's happening nationally when it comes to young people getting married? Are we seeing fewer 19, 20, 21-year-olds married? Or do you know? Am I catching a cold?
No, I do know. It's very strange, both the research and my experience, because on one hand, kids are shying away from marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They don't trust it.
Yeah.
At this point, it's interesting what a debate about gay and lesbian marriage at this point, and the other people don't even trust marriage now. But at the same time, we're seeing a tremendous number of 20-somethings divorce. That's on my website, is one of the four trends I've seen in the last couple of years, is 20-something divorce. I had probably 34 cases at one point of people who've gotten or are about to get divorced, and they're not even 26 or 7 years old yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you sum that, it suggests marriage amongst young people is a fragile item right now.
Yeah. Teen dating is our topic. Parents, if you have a question about what you see your son or daughter doing and what they're up to, Wes Crenshaw is in the house to answer your questions. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Lindister from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I like that comment about you're not an adult until you're about 25. That makes a lot of sense to me.
That's because you're over 25.
Yeah, I am. No, I believed that when I was a kid. You have to be careful. But I like to bring up something what I call casual dating. And I'm dating, and I've met some young ladies, and we just go out and have a good time, and kiss her on the cheek goodbye, and that's it.
And that is a model we see at Can I ask you how old you are? Will you tell me, or am I invading your...
Well, I'm dating younger women, and I lie to them about my age.
Well, that's very unethical of you.
Yes, it is. No, what I tell them, I say I'm 37, but that's a lie. So they know I'm lying.
It is... You're talking about companionship dating there, and there's sure nothing wrong with that. In fact, it potentially reduces some of the complexities. Now, I'm kind of curious what your experience has been when and if there's a mismatch, because it's one thing to tell someone up front, I am not, you know, I'm good for half a relationship here. and then for them to hear that and actually accept it and follow through on it. Sometimes those two things don't work very well. Have you run into that problem?
No, it's never come up in conversation. But we usually go out and we have a good time. I ask some of my favorite restaurants, and we have a glass of wine, eat some food, and then make idle chit-chat or serious chit-chat, depending on what it is. And then I call them up, and I kiss them on the cheek goodbye. And I say, here's what I say. I say, do you mind when the date's over if I kiss you on the cheek goodbye? And they say, no, that's fine. That way I let them know I'm not going to try to maul them in the car or something like that. So I let them know up front. And then if we have a second or a third date, then we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, I think that you have a good system down there for companionship dating. Where that becomes problematic, and you've got it pretty well in hand, is when it becomes what I call asynchronous. And one person, and it can be either gender, one person, despite your statements, begins to believe that the relationship is going somewhere that it isn't. And as long as you keep dealing with that as it comes, then it's okay. But it's hard to get two people to land on the same spot on the board in a dating relationship sometimes. But you've got it done.
No, that's happened to me, too. I was dating a young lady as a school teacher in the suburban town. And she didn't want to move to Kansas City. I didn't want to move to her town, so we just kind of faded away. It's very sad, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Lannister, thank you for the call. Well, good
thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye. Jana from Pleasant Hill. Jana, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hello. My question for you, I am a high school teacher at Harrisonville High School, and I was wondering if you had heard of the new trend. I've noticed it with the teenagers just this year. They call it talking to, and it's the step for them before dating. So you can't date anyone else while you're talking to someone, but you're not actually dating this person yet. And if you had heard of it, what is your opinion of this completely new kind of relationship that teenagers have created?
Yeah, okay.
I'm really glad you called, Janet. That's really interesting.
It's not as new as you think it is. That's been about 5 or 6 years.
And it's called talking to.
Right. So here's how it works. It's kind of funny. I had a college girl I was working with a few years ago, and she and I decided that what one needs now is a chart on my wall. And back 20 years ago, the chart on my wall would have had about 5 positions on it, from friends that don't hold hands to married. And there's about 5 things in between there. There are about 25 or 30 now, and you just named one of them. And one of the things when I talk – and I do speak this language fluently. If I did not, I would not be as popular a guy as I am with young people. And so there is a there is talking to someone – And one has to actually then ask the question, do you mean talking? And that tells us that it is a predating relationship. And I actually am a fan of talking to someone, because it is an interview process. The nuances of language.
That's great.
It is a communication process that does kind of interview. The couple kind of interviews each other. And there will usually be some clarification about sexual expectations, which comes up right off the bat now, as well as...
Is that right? Right,
absolutely.
Away.
Absolutely. And I actually teach kids some things to do in talking that are helpful, like find out how somebody gets along with their family and find out, what their previous relationships have been like. There's a lot of things one can talk about and gauge the value of the dating relationship. But, yes, at that some point in there, talking then goes to exclusively talking to someone, which means you really shouldn't be talking to someone else in the same manner you're talking to the potential dating partner. And then you move from there into some agreement about exclusivity. And that's when further disclosure comes out, with kids about things in their lives. If somebody's, you know, had a parent die or something that's kind of a serious issue, usually those discussions happen at the point of exclusivity. And then, believe it or not, at that is not the point at which one is considered boyfriend-girlfriend. That's another step up. When you say that you're a boyfriend-girlfriend, usually that makes you Facebook, you make yourself Facebook official at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Referring to someone as my boyfriend is a big old deal. And then it's kind of on from there.
Jana, what do you think of it, this idea of talking to?
Well, personally, I have several students doing it. And I told actually a girl yesterday, I said, I think it's a great idea to get to know somebody for the first couple weeks or months. But then what I have in my school is I have students who are talking to someone for 5 or 6 months, and it basically becomes, sometimes for the boy, a way to avoid committing further. But this way, mm-hmm. the girl can't talk to someone else, but she's not ever going to ask her out. And so I have some girls that are unhappy with this. And, you know, for me, I said, you know, at the 5 or 6 month mark, especially in high school, I would walk away and find somebody else who's willing to commit a little sooner. It's not like you're getting engaged, you know, but just move up to the next step, which for them is often, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend or something. And so for me, I feel like it's a good idea at first, a great idea. But if it goes on too long, it can just be a way for them to avoid commitment forever.
Right.
Well, you've opened up a big old can of worms here, more than you may even realize. You're one of the problems, and boys are sure free to call in and take issue if they wish, but one of the big things I have seen in the last 5 or 6 years is that boys do not have to work very hard to get companionship, sexual companionship,
I totally agree.
Intimacy, friendship, et cetera. And I to their credit, sort of, it isn't just sex. It's taken me till just recently to get this. It is also intimacy. They like mm-hmm. to sleep with the girl, literally just snooze, z's come out of their cartoon bubble, sleeping. And that's intimacy, that's closeness. But what they do not have to do is buy the cow to get the milk, as the old joke goes. And this creates, in my view, some very confusing and hurtful relationships. Mm. So part of the chart on my wall, and it's kind of a joke with most of the clients I see, is I would then tell them they would have to get up and go point on the chart where they really think their relationship is. You would be surprised how many people would have a hard time pointing. They are not sure a lot of times. And I try to emphasize with kids and adults and everybody else, this is kind of with the previous caller, you have to know what your relationship is. You have to know where the connection is between the two of you. And girls have kind of let boys off the hook in the last 5 years. And I've actually told girls they ought to all go on strike for better conditions. I haven't gotten a union going yet, but I think that would help.
Well, Jen, I'm glad you called.
Thank you. That was a great insight, thanks very much.
You spurred some great conversation. Thank you, Janet. Good luck teaching down there as well. We're wondering if your teen has experienced heartbreak. Do they have their own rules for dating as a result? Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You can tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. And Leslie writes us on Twitter, how do we learn the limits of compromising so we understand when we're in danger of becoming a doormat?
Yeah, what a
good... Boy, that's a great question.
An awesome
Very
question.
Very succinct, isn't it?
Let me open on that by saying that the fundamental failure in all dating, the biggest mistake you can make, is to not understand that dating is the process of figuring out who you don't belong with. You got to think that through, because without that understanding, everything else kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So one must not, if one senses their doormatness, they really have to question whether they should be with that person and understand there's someone else that they can be with. This is very difficult. And so people stay in doormat land far too long because they just cannot imagine well enough what it would be like to be elsewhere. It is kind of a failure of imagination. And so I think compromise is necessary. Couples do change each other. I don't know What psychologist came up with the idea that people don't change each other? Has your spouse changed you over the years?
Well, Steve? Of course.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine has too. And so couples do change each other, and people do want to change, but not very much. So you have to pick somebody whose core is pretty solid, and then there's going to be some adjustments and changes as you get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
When that goes beyond reasonable, fair, mutual compromise, and the feeling of doormatness shows up, you either need to head off to the therapist. And yes, I see late teen couples in therapy all the time as part of that process.
Mm.
Or you've got to decide that you have found another person you don't belong with.
Yeah. Teen dating, adult dating, it's all on the table today on this Valentine's Day. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house. Again, our number 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or tweet us at @kcuruptodate. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about composer Virgil Thompson or reactions to the State of the Union address, you can find those and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's program, former Nebraska Democratic Senator Ben Nelson joins us, and we'll also look back at the music of World War I. This hour, Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house. He co-authors a Double Take advice column for teens and their parents in the Lawrence Journal World. We're talking about teens and adult dating, for that matter, on this Valentine's Day. And our number, again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Wes, you say never marry anyone you don't want to be divorced from. Because?
Yeah. Well, the way people, everybody wants to judge someone by how they treat the people they like.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make a lot of sense because they probably treat the people they like pretty well. And if they don't, you're probably going to stay away from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's how they treat the people they don't like that is helpful. And if you ever have been through high conflict divorce, you know that when people get mad at each other, they have different ways of acting. And it's preferable to be with someone you see treating their enemies with some respect or avoiding conflict and that kind of stuff. Because once you become the person they're mad at, you're more likely to be treated with that same dignity and respect.
So it all makes sense.
Sure. When
yeah.
Taken down to the street, if a kid is dating someone who beats up others in school, she probably should bail
mm-hmm.
on that relationship, even if he does not touch her. Because someday she will be on the bad side of his temper. And that's certainly true in the gender reversal, too.
Yeah. Again, 816-235-2888. Brian McTavish with your weekend to-do list will be dropping by in just a few minutes. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Laura from Prairie Village. Laura, good morning.
Good morning. My son is 15 years old, and we have a very open policy about his cell phone that we're allowed to look at texts and make sure that everything is okay. And he was dating a girl this fall, and she solicited him for sex and was very clear that she wanted to have sex with him. And he told her that he wasn't ready. And she ended up dumping him for another kid. And I was just really surprised at her forwardness and
don't
how
be.
She treated him.
Don't be.
I was going to say, Laura, if you've listened to the show in recent months, Wes is right. The answer is don't be. Yeah.
Yeah. There is no – we must give up our historic sexism about this, partly because it's never right to have a gender-based view of anything, but more importantly because things have changed. And I absolutely know boys who feel pressured to have sex by girls. Now, some of the, it's always interesting to me because I haven't met a lot of boys who feel like saying no in that situation, but I sure know some of them because they really have good boundaries and they want that to be something special and spiritual like I was talking about earlier. And I appreciate your son having that kind of boundary so that he feels like he has an authentic choice. I get really frustrated with kids when it really has changed. I used to be not at all a fan of peer pressure. I thought that was the dumbest excuse people could make. And nowadays, it's really worse than that. If people aren't smoking marijuana, people are mad at them for that. If people aren't having sex, I've had girls bully their friends into having sex. They'll go out and get a boy for them to have sex with.
Wow.
And make just get mad at them. And the reason for this comes from, I have a bachelor's degree in sociology, and I can tell you what this is the elimination of deviance in society. The peer group doesn't want to see itself as doing anything wrong if they're stoned every day from 4 in the afternoon till midnight. So anyone who deviates from that has to be stopped. Mm. And there's two ways to stop them: kick them out of the group or force them to join.
Ah, that's interesting.
And so this is really the underpinning of what we've called more tritely peer pressure. And I appreciate your son, making a choice for himself.
Okay. Laura, good luck. Thank you. Let's go to David from Overland Park. David, you're on the air with Dr. Wes Crenshaw.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to put a different spin on things. I'm the single father of a schizophrenic 17-year-old girl, and she's going to be 18 now in the middle of next month. And I've been amazed with her and the group that she runs around with. What you said earlier about, you know, the intimacy where they will lay down together on the floor and watch TV, and they'll even sleep together, but there's nothing sexual about it. It's just the intimacy. There's a lot of that, but the crew that she runs around with are pretty much celibate by choice.
I know those people too. When I talk in generalities, you know, there are always different versions of that. I know several groups of kids that are just as you describe. But it isn't the general culture. It isn't the last caller is representing more what we see in the culture on average right now.
What I've been seeing is that with this crew that I have the most experience with, sure, of course, it's not exclusively that way, but the ones who end up, you know, having premature sexual relationships end up regretting it, and the rest of them look at them and say, you know what, I don't want to go down that road.
Well, so and that I would
rather be a tight crew than mess with sexual crap.
Yeah, young people don't really like to hear this, but most of them who I see do agree that it makes sense that once your brain finishes developing and you are now an adult and you're looking down through history at your teenage self, it's very easy to be angry at that person and feel like they betrayed you. And that person is yourself, that they, you know, all of the sexual escapades now feel different when you're 25 or 6. And it's hard. I work at it, but it's hard to get kids at 18 or 17 to see it that way. They're not there yet. But your point is well taken. There are a lot of regrets to be had between 16 and 25. And one wants to try to traverse the minefield as wisely as they can.
David, thank you for the call. Laura writes us with this question at UpToDate@KCUR.org. What do you think about marrying high school sweethearts? How often are those relationships successful?
Yeah.
Laura's a high school sweetheart. I wonder if Laura's a high school sweetheart.
You know, it's like such a great question. I'm not quite married to a high school sweetheart, but my freshman year in college, so I'm with someone I was with when I was 19. I always tell kids, do not follow my example. I just got lucky and married the right person. Mm-hmm. And it is unlikely in general, and the word unlikely means low probability. That's all it means, that you're going to meet the person you work best with at 18 or 17, because people between 17 and 26 change
so much,
tremendously.
Yeah.
And if you're fortunate, and I know people who are, you happen to get with someone at that age that really is going to change with you, that you two are going to kind of go like geese, you know, you fly in formation. It is unusual that people are able to maintain that level of togetherness in their goals and aspirations and sexual desires and so on in that age group. So the statistics are with me on this, that generally if you marry, you know, usually high school sweethearts marry fairly young. It may be 22 or 3, but they still have been together for several years at that point. And generally those relationships do not stick. And it makes me sad because I think it's the sweetest story ever. But that is my thought.
On this Valentine's Day, we're talking about dating. We're focusing on teenage dating, but so many of the rules apply to adults as well. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Lawrence psychologist Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house with us here today. Let's go back to a call here from Joe from Kansas City, Missouri. Joe, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I've been in long-distance relationships, only long-distance relationships, so I'm trying to adjust to dating locally in Kansas City. I'm just trying to figure how that all works. It seems like for long distance relationships, you can talk over the phone, you know, every night, every other night, for hours, whereas that's not really the case. Locally, it just seems, you know, too soon, and being, you know, more physical is not possible in a long distance relationship, and so it's kind of all mixed up.
At one point, I had thought that was going to be our topic for today, and then I broadened it out to make it more Valentine's Day-ish. But we're going to actually put a show together on both the online meeting and dating process and long-distance relationships, because they kind of go hand in hand. And only in – I take it you're a younger person – only in this generation has this really become practical, because you have FaceTime and Skype and texting in a way that, you know, kids text each other in the same classroom at this point. So if you're in New York, it's not that different. But you are hitting upon one of the complexities. And the dynamic of long-distance dating is that the few times you get to see each other are just, you know, hopefully massively romantic. You know, you go down on the plaza and you get a violinist to play at your table, and you sit out on the veranda and you kiss and hold hands, and then you go back to wherever it is you came from. And these sporadic dating experiences train you to believe in the relationship in a way that doesn't really hold up when you become local. Being local is waking up to somebody, you know, who has toothpaste, not non-toothpaste breath, and, you know, leaves their underwear hanging in the shower, and the things that make real life with couples different. And so long-distance dating is a whole interesting dynamic. It's very common now, even amongst teenagers. We'll have one that goes off to college. Those relationships of late have lasted longer than I had expected, because they are able to Skype and do the things that allow people to see each other literally on the computer screen. So, mm-hmm. But it never is a replacement for that daily interaction that really tests a relationship.
Joe, thank you for the call and good luck.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Let's go to Dylan from Lenexa. Dylan, good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Hello. Okay. So I just want to do, so I'm a teen
right.
from Lenexa, so I thought I'd get some insight. Most of the callers I know have been adults.
Oh, you heard my request for young men to call in. Go for it.
What?
You must have heard my request for young men to call in and argue.
So about 3 callers ago, there was a woman who said she was reading through her child's text and he was pressured to have sex, and his son's girlfriend or whatever broke up with him. So I just thought if we could bring up for discussion parents' involvement in relationships, because I know a lot of people that I know feel violated when they're parents go through their texts and they look through their texts. And for the most part, the parents at least think that they're open with their child, but the children feel violated. So whether the parents look through their phones or not, the kids are going to find ways, you know, to do the texting or to hook up with each other, whether it's not over the phone.
Yeah, I think you raise a number of good questions about the ethics of of how much parents should do this. Now, my rule is different than the previous caller's, and I'll tell you what it is, and I'll tell you exactly why. I can do it quickly. I see texting and phones and diaries that you lock and put between the sheets of your bed as private. And until such time as a parent has reasonable suspicion that something imminently risky is going on, and I count that as drug sale and distribution, drug use in the home, unprotected sex, something very dangerous. And at that time, parents have a right to violate privacy. But up to that point, I think parents should not do so for the reasons you cite.
For phones, anything else?
Right. Twitter and Facebook are different because they are like giant printing presses. You are putting your message out, and it isn't just to subscribers, if you use that metaphor. It really gets translated to everybody. Even if you lock your Twitter feed, people can retweet you, they can copy and paste and send and so on. So I think it's okay for parents to be followers and fans on Facebook or friends on Facebook. But I would agree with you that when parents try to control too much the relationships between their kids and their dating partners, as opposed to influence it and support it and guide it, I think it risks kids, you know, running off and being in opposition to the parent just to do that.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, I'm glad you called in, Dylan.
It's a good call.
Yeah, appreciate
call
it.
Call us again in the future. We like young men calling.
Absolutely. Dylan, thanks for the call. And Wes, I should point out that next month when you're back, we'll talk about the other side of this equation. This will be Dr. Wes's breakup rules. You say breaking up is the most important element of dating. We'll get a whole lot more about that when you come back next month. And Wes, always good to have you here.
It's great to be here. We'll see you then.
You bet. That's Dr. Wes Crenshaw.